Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
Welcome to the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Niall McGrath, as always, alongside me today, Mark the Miserable Moriarty. Mark, what's happening, bro?
Mixed Martial Arts Co. Oh, shit, I haven't even got any fucking tagline now today. That's really annoying.
But you're a dickhead, so why would you need a tagline?
No, shut up. Not with this misery bollocks. That's really harsh. You know, have yourself a heart there, will you?
Obviously in the
Let's get to the week. Fuck you.
Mad week again, obviously, with Dana White's press conference release with Ariel Helwani. What do you want to call it? On Fuel TV, the interview, whatever. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But obviously in the show today, we have a fucking killer lineup, as always. First of all, we have the newly crowned Cage Warriors Fighting Championship middleweight champion, Chris the Killing Fields, from Dublin, Ireland. So we're loving that shit again. Our second major, our third, Ash the Bash as well.
Second or third major
champion from a mixed martial arts promotion.
We have another crowned person.
Yes, we have. Of course we do. Yeah, we've Muhammad King Mo Lawal joined us today. Bellator and TNA pro wrestler joined us on the line to speak his opinions. And in fairness to him, very nice the guy, because he was in the airport today as well, and he was stuck for time.
You try talking to people in airports, it's not nice.
Not nice, but fair play to King Mo. He came on and talked to us as well. And obviously another guy who was in the news again last night, as we always do, we report current shit, motherfuckers. Henzo Gracie, the god that is, from the Gracie family. Henzo Gracie, great to talk to Henzo, and especially after what happened to him last night. He met a few bad guys, as
basically Niall tried to attack him on the side of New York streets.
Yeah, I'm from New York, Mark.
Oh shit, sorry, what?
I'm joking, I'm gone.
You? I thought you were.
I'm from New York.
Oh, I thought you were. That's what you always tell me. That's when we started this podcast. You said you were a mixed martial artist from New York.
I'm moving pretty soon, yeah. But Henzo talked to us about his experience last night, which was pretty traumatic and a pretty strange situation that he was tweeting when he was kicking
the whole way through,
is
it?
Yeah, apparently so.
So it was more traumatic for them.
I wouldn't fuck with Henzo, I'm not joking.
Jesus, man.
But Henzo, you know, being from the Gracie family, you got to respect the god like that. So kudos to Henzo, and thanks to me for Henzo coming on. Absolutely brilliant insight. He talks about Frankie, everything else later on. So we'll get to that later on anyway.
That's and it also, then, isn't it? No, we couldn't have anyone else. That's impossible.
No, what?
That's the headline. That's the main event. That's
have
it.
Have you forgotten someone?
No. There's no way we could have anyone else. I'm presuming. This is what the MMA era does. This is what they do. They have the big event there. It's like, that's it, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I put the fire out in this, or is that it?
Oh, shit. Sorry. Is there who?
The fire out. So,
oh shit! Caught up with, oh my god! Oh, see, how long were you holding on to that one?
Caught up with top UFC heavyweight contender Stipe Miocic, who will be facing off against Stefan Struve in Nottingham, come 27th September. Mark, is that right?
I don't know. I'm looking at my passport now and waiting for the stamp.
Yes, we can't wait for that, because we've been talking brawls.
Talking brawls are going on tour, baby.
Covering it. So we can't wait for that. And Stipe, absolute top gentleman. Thanks, man. He was actually in the station, I think, today when we were talking to him. So fair play to Stipe for, you know, juggling two jobs at the same time. And Mark, obviously, okay, let's start.
Well, what should we do now with the Nando's Andy Ogle party and the Stipe fire party?
Week.
Yeah, no, but after party do we go to?
We'll set the place on fire. We're Irish, man. We do what
that's
we want.
True, actually. We could, yeah, that's good. That's rock, though.
Okay, Mark, first of all, let's start with obviously the week that was in it. And Dana White came on Fuel TV with Ariel Helwani to discuss the 151 situation. What was your general take on that?
Well, I thought it was Dana basically trying to bring back some purity to the organisation and trying to go that it's not all John Jones' fault. We will be able to jump behind him again, and it's all going to be okay again. It was trying to basically cover up what was an awful teardown from the 2 weeks previous. It hasn't worked, but It's a good try.
He said in the first question of the show, he said, I actually agreed with Helwani. It's the first and last time I'll probably ever agree with you. I thought it was, to be honest with you, I'm not going to lie about this now. I thought it was quite staged, the whole interview. Well, the fact it was in the TUF training centre in Vegas. And, you know, I think it was a bit too much patronising to the fans of the UFC. If I might add, no.
Well, like, I think you're dead right, Noel. I think that that was an interview which was, it was geared up to get a couple of not so subtle messages across from the UFC. There was a reason that that interview existed, and that was to jump behind John Jones again and start promoting the fight because they only had this much time to do it.
Mm.
And that was the only reason that interview existed. And it was there in a very, very staged platform. It was with someone. Ariel's a great interviewer. He's very good in that situation. And it was...
That makes one of us agree that. Sorry, go on.
Well, no. It was it was in a situation where Dana knew what he was doing and he knew how to get it out. And he knew that he wasn't going to be totally torn apart on it anyway. So,
yeah, but he couldn't stir the pot in that one. But anyway, I don't know what he was cooking, but it wasn't seem to be a stew. But,
you trying to say something there, Noel?
No,
sorry.
I won't say anything about that, but you know the way
I feel, it's just kind of,
but it's not, I really respect the way Dana White conducts himself. I think it's a breath of fresh air, the way he curses at guys. I think that's the way he's built the company. And I think
do you actually
different. Yes, you know what he
does. You're a fucking idiot though, seriously.
I'm not an idiot, because
why do you respect that?
Because it's the way he has gone about his business from day one, right?
Okay, well why do you think the sport's going to grow?
The sport, man, he's made it grow. He is the one.
So how does it cross over to mainstream?
Mate, but it's already crossed over to mainstream in many countries, okay. Bar ours and bar certain parts of Europe.
Okay, no, not to start our tragic, scary fight of the week, I'm not going to bring up Frankie Edgar's or anything, but hold the fucking phone here. The fact is that when Dana White starts that shit, he is the front man of the promotion. Yes. Is that the right thing to be? Yes. Is the top man of the promotion meant to
Because, I'll tell you why. Because if he does not assert himself the way he does, it attracts gooses like the boxing world. You have guys stepping in, shitheads trying to come, guys getting involved, worming their way into the mixed martial arts world, right?
Yeah.
As we talked to Wayne McCullough about, 4 weeks ago?
No, that's true. Yeah.
And Wayne was pretty, you know, he thinks it's a pretty good idea to keep the UFC under one anarchy, under one promotion, like, you know, everyone getting paid by the
UFC. But that means no one
and
gets
no
paid.
No outsiders coming in, like no TV deals outside coming in.
But does that not just mean a monopoly?
But it does to a certain extent, but if they can regulate that, and there's only one man that can do that, is Dana White.
That sounds like Rupert Murdoch speaking, though.
No, but mate, listen, what has fucking ruined boxing?
Okay,
what has ruined boxing? Tell me.
Okay,
answer my question. What has ruined boxing? What? What one thing has ruined boxing?
The exact same thing is probably going to ruin the UFC, and the fact that there's too many fights and none of them are of any interest to people.
You're wrong.
Oh, corruption.
No, you're wrong. Everything you've said is wrong.
What's wrong about it?
TV money has ruined boxing.
Well, boxing,
because there's different companies that can't agree in a fight for a certain set amount. That's what's ruined boxing over the years, well, the last 10 years. Fact. That's why people have
you
seen
say,
the fight.
You say,
that's
you
why
say,
boxing is dying.
You say what you will. Okay, the fact is that the biggest fight, you complain to the holy heavens about the fact that
one body, one regulation.
Well, who are the biggest sports earners of the year of all sports? Who do you think they are?
American footballers.
No, Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Yes, did they fight this year? Once each.
Yeah.
He lost to Brandon.
And do you know where all the celebrities are? There
and
are those fights.
It's a one-dimensional sport. I'm finished with it, to be honest.
Do you know what I think is just pissing me off?
And why haven't Mayweather, and this is my whole point, why haven't Mayweather and Pacquiao fought? They say it's because of drug testing, all the shit. It's because of TV.
Oh, it's not because they're teasing it up and they don't really want it.
It's because
they're
ducking each other, right?
It's the fact of Anderson Silva. If Anderson Silva and fucking...
But it's two different TV companies trying to come together and agree. That's 90%. Of it. With the UFC, it's not that. They have that platform. They have a stadium. Look at it like this, guys. To have a stadium put in place, it's a fucking octagon in the middle of the fucking stadium. Fight if you want to fight. Don't if you don't want to fucking fight.
Okay.
Get paid your dues.
Okay, no, I'm only going to say this to you, okay? You've complained in the past about the comparison of... we talked with Muhammad Lawal about this, about comparison to the historic roots of professional wrestling. But the fact is that the UFC has modelled their brand almost entirely on the WWF. and taken on. Dana White is the Vince McMahon character, who is the front of the company, who is the outspoken idiot who goes out there and speaks continuously on Twitter and is constantly the front of the company and will constantly be the guy who everyone just looks at. That happens in no other sport, and form of entertainment, form of anything.
This isn't a form of entertainment. This is where people get it wrong.
It fucking is.
It's not.
It's promoted as entertainment. It's a sport which is promoted like entertainment. Most of the fans of UFC are not actually hardcore sports fans. They're actually entertainment fans.
What did you say to me earlier on, Mark? Who's a dying breed? What two mixed martial artists are a dying breed, is what you said to me earlier on. Mola Wal and Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
Does that not prove my point?
Yeah, but...
No, it does not.
Yeah, I'm sorry, can I say as well, when they're a dying breed and the people who are selling fights, the big sellers of fights, that means that the sport is dying.
Man, there's a difference between getting in a ring, right?
So when we have loads of Rory McDonald's getting in there and fucking going,
what's wrong with
I just want to get in there and fight a fight. Because they have no personality and no one is interested
yes,
in them.
Yes, he's boring. Yes. Yeah. But listen, obviously there's going to be guys, different personalities that are going to come out. You've loads of good personalities.
No, but you put a spin on a Rory McDonald versus...
No, I think Rashad Evans is... people like this...
Yeah, Rashad Evans is fucking amazing. That's what I mean.
What's your point? It's not going to be like pro wrestling.
It's not what I mean. It's pro boxing, pro wrestling. All of it's about fight selling. It's about selling a fight. It's always been the same. Boxing fights were always sold under the same premise of picking one guy who everyone likes against one guy who everyone dislikes.
Why did you compare it to wrestling then when boxing was the original fucking...
Because we had
promoter.
King Mo on earlier.
Yeah, well what's that fucking
and we were talking about that. So that's my reasoning. It's damn good, baby, and you know it.
And let's get to the King Mo interview that we recorded earlier on.
It'll probably validate a few things that we both said, I'd say, on each side of things.
Probably you're still a dickhead, though.
I can't say that. No, he made some damn good points. He really, really, it's a big opportunity for him, and to be with two organizations like that, like Bellator and
TNA.
Well, obviously, but no, to see a guy going out there at 31 and going and working with TNA and Bellator at the same time, it's a bold move for someone to make, and gotta respect him for that.
Big time. Okay, guys, listen to the interview anyway, and we'll catch you in a few minutes. Thanks a million, guys. Cheers. Bye.
Boom!
Hi, this is Hazel Gracie, and we are talking with fucking bras.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion and current Bellator and TNA star King Muhammad Lawal. How are you keeping, mate? How are things with you?
Man, everything's good, man. Just landed in California.
And how is the knee treating you? What sort of percentage are you back to fitness now? And how have you started back in full training yet?
I'm probably about 85%. I'm good. The sickness is gone. And I've just been hitting mitts. You know, I haven't started grappling just yet, but I've been hitting mitts and everything. So I'm looking to start going at it again in mid October.
And how's the mixture of doing the two disciplines now, of to be training MMA and to train pro wrestling at the same time? Is that a real strain on your body?
Not just yet, because I haven't started the pro wrestling training just yet.
Yeah.
I start that in about two weeks.
And I think Dave Meltzer said that about Sakuraba, that he said that it took about 6 months to get out of your system the reflex of a worked punch and a real punch. Do you find that tricky to be able to mix between the two art forms at the same time?
No, because, you know, a work punch to me, you know, you kind of know what's going to happen, you know what I'm saying, in pro wrestling. MMA, you don't know what's going to happen, but you know the guy far in front, you know, across the cage from you is coming to knock your head off.
Yeah.
So to me, I figured this should be no different.
And King Mo, we saw it last night, we saw a bit of a thing go down on Twitter between yourself and Dave Bautista. What was that all about?
Oh, that was just a joke. That was all a joke.
Yeah.
People, like, you know, the thing is, like, I think people take Twitter too serious.
Yeah.
I was just joking, I wasn't being serious at all. And people bought into it, so I just went along with it.
How are you feeling in your role within the Bellator and the TNA ranks? Considering it was about a year ago that you, with the staph infection and everything that you had to go through with that, and being let go from Zuffa, did you ever feel like you'd be in a position where doing something, one of your first loves of wrestling, and mixing it with MMA, and being the front of a promotion like this?
I didn't know it was going to happen, you know what I'm saying, but everything happens to the best, you know what I'm saying? I'm glad. I have no regrets, you know what I'm saying?
only thing I feel bad is, you know, I got released for what I call that woman, but other than that, you know, I'm in a happier place.
Obviously, yeah, you're going to make your Bellator debut soon on Bjorn Rebney and the guys at Bellator. Have they given you a date for any fight or when you may make your debut in Bellator?
Yeah, I'm making my debut in January. It'll be on Spike TV.
You were about to help Big Country out on the Tough series. Are you keeping the same team behind you as you move over to Bellator?
Yeah. AKA, and I'm going to Mike's gym in Holland.
Cool.
So nothing's going to change.
And what's your plan in the future? Are you going to go? Is your aim to get back towards to Zuffa contract, or are you going to stick it out with Bellator for a while?
I'm cool with Bellator, man. To me, it's not about the organization. Some people make a big deal about Zuffa this, Zuffa that. I can give a damn about Zuffa. I just want to do what makes me happy, do what makes me feel good. And if Bellator is going to continue to support me, then I'm going to stick with Bellator. You know, I'm not to get people. I'm not this guy that's going to be, you know, a slave to a brand.
Yeah.
You know, so I just want to do what helps get me paid.
Is that how you felt today with Zuffa? Did you feel like you were a slave to a brand?
I'm not a slave to a brand, but I feel like a lot of fans are, because, you know, every question I get is about Zuffa, and people fail to realize organizations can make you look good, and organizations can make you look bad. You know, it's about the fighters and who they fight. It's not about who you fight for.
Yeah.
It's about who you're fighting and how you look when you win.
Chael Sonnen reached out to you when you were in trouble with the leg. I always consider you two the last of the proper talkers in MMA, the guys who are going to out there and sell a fight. Do you feel that this is just something which is disappearing with the new breed coming through?
Yeah, it's disappearing because here's the thing. The fans are confused on what they want.
Mm.
The fans either want someone to talk trash, but then they want someone, when you talk trash, they want to boo you and talk bad about you. But then they want a street fight. But then they want to say sport, you know.
Yeah.
The reason why Anderson Silva did over 1 million buys, and that's because Chael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's a reason why people watch certain people fight, and that's their fighting style. You know, if you want to call it a legit sport, you can't be bashing someone for using game plans, because they use game plans in all true sports. You know, so I think the fans are confused on what they want.
What did you think of the whole Jones backing down and going, I'm not giving Chael the fight, I don't want to give him the pleasure? What did you think of it?
I don't know, just really, to me, it's, you know, he chose, it's his choice, and, you know, it's whatever to me. I really don't care, you know, personally, you know, I feel like, you know, if he's a champ and the opponent packed out, they should reschedule the fight, not force him to take a fight at different, because, you know, really, when you think about it, he was training for a certain type of fighter, and he got a different type of fighter, so, you know. You know, it's his choice.
Do you find an over amount of pressure on you to step into the Bellator division, a division which isn't hugely strong, but everyone's assuming you're just going to win and front the company forever? Do you find a lot of pressure bearing down on you coming back from injury?
No. I mean, I just got to go out there and fight. That's all. There's no secret to it. I can go out there and fight and win. What is the pressure?
Do you feel a resurgence in your joy in the sport? Because you get to do pro wrestling as well at the same time. And is that fun to you?
To me, I'm just, you know, it's whatever with me. You know, I'm not even thought too deep about it. I just thought about, you know, hey, it's time to have fun. And that's all I'm concerned about, is doing, is having fun.
And are you concerned about your body, Mo, that your body might go into, you know, overdrive and you might get a lot of injuries, because it's quite a lot to juggle around, really, isn't it?
Nah, I'm not concerned about that. You know, it is what it is, you know what I'm saying? I find ways to stay healthy.
And is this going to be a big run for you? How long do you think you can keep up both at the same time? Is MMA, would you say, do you want to be out of that by about 35, 36, or donate your time to wrestling then?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the dates, so I just looked at, like, you know, when I get bored with it. You know, if I get bored with doing it, then I'll leave it. You know, that's how I do it. I don't have a timetable. When I get bored, I leave things. Leave things alone.
And who's worked with you in there? Have any wrestlers pulled you aside? Because you're almost turning into a student again now and having to pick it up but now at 31 now. Has anyone taken you aside and kind of given you helpful tips or anything?
You know, Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, Sting, Hulk Hogan.
Cool.
The teacher gave me some words, you know, everybody said something to me, you know. I'm just anxious to start training. I start training in about 2 weeks.
Cool. And are you anticipating that? How do you think it's going to go for you? Do you feel you're... Because you've trained for a bit in the past, haven't you?
I trained for like about 2 weeks in the past, and I had a WWE tryout. I think it'll go good. You know, I'm not really worried. You know, I got plenty of time to learn, and, you know, I'm not putting any
no pressure, man. I just got to go out there and just have fun and learn. That's all it is.
And getting back to your mixed martial arts career, King Mo, is there anyone who you want to see fight in the future? Is there anyone who your eyes on you'd like to, you know, knock them out?
Nah, not really. That's whoever helps to get me paid, you know, saying to me, like, you know, I don't really care.
Yeah. What's your ultimate goal in the mixed martial arts world at the end of the day? Do you want to get back and fight the biggest guys in the world and you know, the guys with the titles and the guys with all the money? And do you want to knock these sort of guys out? Is that your biggest goal?
No, my biggest goal is for me to get... I'm not worried about anybody else's money. My biggest goal is for me to get money and to have fun. I'm not worried about nobody else, what nobody else is doing, because it doesn't matter to me. You know, what the other man's doing doesn't affect me. Yeah. Only what I'm doing affects me.
Brilliant stuff. King Mo, absolute pleasure to have you on the line, and I'd like to wish you all the success in your future conquest with MMA and pro wrestling. Thanks a million, bro, for coming
Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, bro.
And that was King Mo of Bellator and TNA Pro Wrestling Fighting Championships.
It's not just pro wrestling, it's mixed martial arts as well.
Yes, but, you know, I think personally you need to concentrate one or the other. I will not disagree with King Mo, but I will disagree with you, Mark.
Well, you can disagree with me all you want, but I think that Mo has the right idea, and I think that it's good to see someone trying it. I think there's a lot of professional wrestlers who've tried to go into mixed martial arts and try to go the other way, and I think this is the first time we've tried to see someone go this way and trying to go from mixed martial arts into wrestling, which and trying to keep the MMA.
Well, I think it makes a lot of guys look stupid, to be honest.
In what sense?
Because he's clowning around, really, let's be honest with you, a lot of the time. He wasn't annoyed, obviously, with us in the interview, but it does come across that way sometimes.
Clowning around in what way, though? Like,
being such an arsehole promoting a fight and things like
promoting
that.
Promoting a fight?
I know it sells. it's not going to take
everyone. Not these bastards selling fights again, no.
Not
making money again.
It's a fight for another day, so.
No, but, like, do you not think that it's one of those things that he's just trying to... Like, I think... we've talked about it before, that he is one of the last of the people.
No, you think he's one of the last, not me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think Mo. I think he goes out of crown. I think it's good and all. But Chael Sonnen is the man, not King Mo.
Well, what's the difference? They're both
what's
people.
The difference?
They're both people on a higher level. Some would say not if you looked at Chael's record, like in
his early record.
Some would say his later record as well. He's coming off two losses.
Well, he's come against one of the toughest.
That's not the point. I know, but what I mean is that he's winning to lose, and but he's coming off losses.
New name, like who was King Mo fought?
Not talking about that right.
Yeah, well,
now.
There
that's
you go. Exactly. Well, there.
The point is the fact that
one or two along the way, lost, win.
What I think is the Strikeforce championship, the Strikeforce division he was in was very strong, but I think the Bellator one he's going into isn't very strong.
The Strikeforce
but he has to build
division
it.
He was in was strong. Light heavyweight division was strong.
No, it wasn't.
He was champion. My arse.
It wasn't that strong.
Sorry, get out of here. It was not strong.
They thought that he was going to be brought in to be the saviour to beat John Jones, and it was going to be all grand. But I don't think it was ever that way. Do you not think that?
Nothing at it like that.
Do you not think when that text message was sent to the your one about the drug commission that
no,
that
I probably thought that, I probably they were going. They probably sent that fucking text message to get him out of there.
Why?
Because he's nowhere near light heavyweight contention.
Sorry, you think that the UFC wouldn't have wanted him on their books?
To be honest, maybe for a little man he would.
Insane.
He would not have sniffed top five title contention in the UFC. I guarantee.
He is without doubt, with my eyes closed, top
what
seven.
Did you, what did you say about Hector Lombard?
I said
what
Hector Lombard was shite.
No, he didn't.
Of course it is.
No, well, do you want to run back to the podcast now?
I think anyone here who's smart enough in a talking brawl is better.
I said Hector Lombard is a fucking joke, a legend and shit, and Bosch came in and kicked his fucking ass.
Here, look, no, let's face it, when the Markelation computer is computing fight stats,
McGraldo will have way more than you.
McGraldo doesn't have a fucking clue what he's talking about.
Sorry, excuse me.
The fact is,
who's called most of the fights? Is that what we're
you can point at me with your arrows
I'm
all you want.
You're
pointing
at me.
It's Grant. I don't mind. But the fact is, I think
you've all these riddles and you don't have any sense. There's all these philosophies and shit.
They ain't no riddles.
Hit me with some fucking juice.
They ain't no riddles. I just think that King Mo going into Bellator, he's trying to grow a promotion. He's trying to build a promotion from the ground.
No, he got kicked out of another promotion, so he's trying to get in this fucking fucking ass back in somewhere
else.
What's
wrong with that? He wants a fucking job.
Fair enough. I've no problem with that. But he's getting two at one. Bit desperate.
And what's wrong with that? That's not desperate. That's building.
It's a bit desperate. Look.
It's like someone being a TV presenter and a radio presenter at the exact same time.
I've no problem with him doing that, but I'm just saying it does look a bit. Mm-mm.
Why does it look a bit?
It does, of course.
If you asked Chelsea to do it, he'd probably do these things.
No, he wouldn't
do it. What do you think all the fucking Pride lads were doing?
Oh, God.
What were the Pride lads doing?
Are we talking about Pride? When was Pride? When did Pride take place?
A few years ago, bro.
Yeah, a few years ago. What's here and now? That's what we talk about, right?
Yeah, I know. But think about it in the sense that, like, look at it, that's where the concept comes from. Most of those lads come from those ideals. I'm kind of arguing from those ideals now. It's quite funny, really. No. Do you know what I'd do if I was you? I'd just pack your argument up in your bag and just go, Mark, you won. It's okay.
Well, Mark, you haven't won at all.
What? But
that, you talk to your backside and you need fucking nappies.
No.
Because you've just shit yourself.
No, that's not... No, that's not creative. It's Vader turning down.
Yes, I
That's very disappointing. I am disappointed in you.
He's in control. Magraldo. All right, listen.
Okay. I didn't even need to say anything during that period, because I'm stronger than that.
You're in love with fucking
him. You fucking cunt.
We all know who Mark is in love with.
Himself.
Oh, you're some fucking twat.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Let's do an interview.
No. No.
You don't want to talk to me for any longer.
I don't actually want to even look
at you. It's fucking 3 o'clock in the morning, is it? What time is it?
It's actually 2 o'clock. You can't get fucking Anthem right, guys. I'm
fuck you.
We actually have a little chat about this before we get to Cage Warriors last weekend. Incredible.
It was pretty good.
It was, like, let's be honest about it. Chris the Killing Fields defeated Pavel Kush, who fucking gassed a big time, let's be honest about it, to become the second male champion of a mixed martial arts promotion. And he's an Irishman, along with Conor McGregor, fighting at the same gym. And I guarantee you guys, you want to watch this gym, everyone in the UFC, everyone around the world, SBG, watch this gym from Dublin, Ireland, because we're going to get behind these guys. I don't give a fuck. They're their own hometown guys, so... We're going to be promoting these guys.
And the Irish Greg Jackson, if you will.
And Ash the Bash Daly as well. We can't forget her, the women's girl from Cage Warriors. She's a top contender as well. So, guys, look out for these. And watch it in Chris the Killing Fields, man. What a performance.
No, it was really... Like,
he stalked him. Like, it was like Conor McGregor. They both, like, SBG gym. They both go out there. They just don't look fazed, man. They both there. They're not gassed. They go out, like, muscle everyone out of it and knock the fucking head off.
And it was one of those things as well that, like, you know, I think you and me were both shocked about it as well. That I think Monday morning, the fact that it was garnering mainstream attention from radio stations around Dublin.
I couldn't believe it. We were both. I texted you, man.
Oh, jeez, we were
what
both.
Happened? What happened? I texted you and went, holy shit, Chris Fields is on.
Spin. I was walking around the fucking garden going, you're fucking kidding me.
Chris Fields
no
is on.
Fucking way.
Spin. Yeah. Three. I ate a lot of pie.
Sorry, are we bleeping out our swears?
What the fuck? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Is someone...
I know, there's no way. There's no way that...
The Irish media... Talking Brawls, hello.
Yeah. Is there some sort of radio show which is covering this shit?
I think someone is trying to fucking, you know, bite our backside at the moment, to be honest with you. But anyway, we won't talk about it. But it was great to see mixed martial arts get the, you know, the mainstream praise
it
deserves.
Like,
it's the first time in Ireland it has.
Like, I think after talking to Conor the other week there as well, Conor McGregor, it's really interesting when you see people who just feel dishonoured by their country.
Yeah, because...
By the fact that they've reached these great heights and everyone's basically pissed on them from a great height and went, not acknowledged their victories and just said that the press have refused to say, you the man. And
you see, like,
it's tricky.
If people can understand this, right, I'll tell you right up now, right? It's like, myself and Mark have a lot of mutual friends and you know, it's one of these things where, you know, everyone, it's not like baseball, whatever, American football, ice hockey, in America especially. And it's not here, it's not like... Obviously, in Brazil and America, it's become a way more mainstream sport. It's harder here to adapt to that because we've our GAA, all this sort of thing. You know, but we're making a move, and
yeah,
and we're gonna get there, Mark.
I think it's funny because like there's little things like we used to be a sporty nation until there's a book written about what happened in Ireland before the formation of the GAA, and we had about 40 fucking gold medals in the Olympics and the hammer and the discus and all the throwy lifty things, all the throwy lifty strongy things. But then all of a sudden,
Cullen and his fucking.
I know, exactly. And then the care got caught and we all went up to the fucking GAA and started playing fucking hurley, blah, blah, blah. But no, the fact is that mixed martial arts in Ireland has a foundation which is so, so strong. Some of the young fighters coming through, some of the gyms in Ireland, there's some gyms in Ireland which are producing such great fighters, and it's so exciting. But the fact is that the media have not a care in the world for it whatsoever.
And I'll tell you one tomorrow, Philip Mulpeter, the Honey Badger, fighting out of Battle Zone tomorrow in Swords. Guys, get down.
That's going to be some night.
That guy was in like one of the best fights I've ever seen in my life.
We have a ticket between us now, and we're going to be fighting over it. We're going to be raffling it off now tonight.
Well, I'm sure you'll be arguing. I've got into Swords tomorrow night.
I know.
I'm gone. Chris Fields.
Well, it was an unbelievable performance.
Amazing night in the man, Jordan, and another proud member of an Irish dynasty in mixed martial arts. We will get there and have a listen to the interview, and we'll talk to you after that.
Damn.
This is King Mo. You're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by newly crowned Cage Warriors Fighting Championships middleweight champion, Chris the Killing Fields. Chris, what a night last weekend. How proud are you of your achievements, and how has the reaction gone down since you got home in Dublin?
It's been great. I'm really obviously very happy with the achievement. It's a big deal for me. I put my life on hold for all this stuff and for a long time now. And just everyone's been great since I got back, you know, a lot of nice messages on Facebook and texts and calls and a lot of people coming to me. I got to go on some radio stations and some like newspapers doing bits and pieces, so it's been really cool.
Brilliant. Great stuff. Going back to the fight, Chris, Pavel Kushk, obviously the opponent you were facing, he gassed in the fight. Were you surprised the way he gassed in the fight so badly?
Well, the guy's like, he's 13-2, all 13 wins by submission, and they're all pretty early in the fight, so we kind of, it tends to be a thing, especially with the Sambo guys, that they get to the leg lock position and they put everything they've got into finishing the fight there. So I think that's kind of what happened, and he was kind of looking at me blankly that I wasn't being caught with the submission, I think, and then he kind of ran out of ideas. I think maybe his heart went then. My opinion would always be that if you're finding a title fight, you should be prepared for five rounds, you know. But I was surprised but happy.
Brilliant.
If that makes any sense.
And obviously gone out to man Jordan with the temperatures and you know, being different. How hard was your weight cut, Chris? Did you have to cut much weight gone out there?
Yeah, I always cut big. I walk around close to 100 kilos and I fight at 84. But I was very, very strict on the fight at this time and kept everything clean for an extra week or two, because I was kind of worried about how the weight cut would go. Like over there, I didn't know what it was going to be like. I wasn't home or it wasn't even England or the food or anything like that. But it all went quite smooth. I had Cottle Pendred there with me as well, so me and him generally cut weight together all the time, so that kind of made it a little bit easier.
And Chris, how did the training go for it in SPG? Did you get any special training partners in to replicate the style of your opponent?
I don't really need to in this gym. There's a bunch of killers on the mat for submission stuff. And I had two guys, Maciek and Eric, who are two guys from Poland that train in the gym. Both of them are like savages on the ground, especially at the leg lock area. So I was meeting up with them twice a week to go over it. And that's, as you can see in the fight, very comfortable when I went to that position. I'd had it done to me a million times by guys. I know he's Pavel was a world sambo champion or something, but I'd rate the guys that I was rolling with much above him. They were catching me. So,
and obviously there's big names in the gym. How good is John Kavanagh and the crew and SBG and how things they're progressing so well at the moment in the gym? Obviously with Conor McGregor and yourself being major champions of some of the best promotion in Europe. How good is John Kavanagh and the boys in SBG? What they do?
I've trained in a lot of the what people call the big gyms. I've trained in AKA before. I've trained in the Tap Out gym in Vegas. I just don't think anywhere touches it. And coaching wise, I've never met anyone like John. It's a great way of explaining the sport. I think as well, I also think you're saying about myself and Conor there, and Ash is also a world champion in the gym here. We've got a bunch of national champions. And then I think Cottle Pendred, would think there's a shot at a Cage Warriors title at this stage. He's had four fights in Cage Warriors, he hasn't lost any, you know, so.
Yeah. And the, hun- And the Honey Badger's in action as well tomorrow night.
Oh, man, I was down at his weight cut today. Like, it's great. I'm really looking forward. I'm going to be cornering for the fight tomorrow, so that's great for me. Like, I've done that a few times with the guys. You know, I kind of maybe just slot in behind John as, like, someone looking after stuff with all the guys. You know, if John's not there, I generally look after it. And, yeah, I can't wait to see Phil go. He's a beast. He's so much fun to watch. Yeah. He's a great fighter as well.
He really is. I'll be down there tomorrow night anyway, so I might come over and
have a drink afterwards or something, man. That'd be cool.
Definitely, bro. Yeah. Definitely, bro. Listen, bro, what's next for you? Where do you go from here?
Well, I have I don't know if this has been announced yet. I don't know if it's even 100%, but I have a feeling that Victor Chang and John Phillips are going to fight in that Cardiff show that they're doing.
Yeah.
With Cage Warriors soon. And I'd say the winner of that fight's me. So I'll be waiting on a call. Cool. I'll be over at the Cardiff show with Cole, who's fighting on it. Be waiting on a call or like to see who I'm fighting, but I'd imagine they're probably going to look for me for the Dublin card
in December. Yeah,
in December. I'm waiting to see about it. I've got to go see a specialist next week about a possible operation on my hip. I have some cartilage damage.
Okay.
But I like, as you can imagine, I'd love it to be John Phillips.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd make my day. I'd love a second shot at that. I think I was dominating the fight up to the point. So
exactly. Yeah, I watched it. Yeah,
Chris, how do you feel now that Cage Warriors as a promotion has grown? Do you feel now you've garnered some mainstream publicity in Ireland after that win? Do you feel that's really kind of validated it's starting to validate the sport as proper as mainstream in Ireland now?
Yeah, like I do think so. It's starting to get there. Like, you know, like I didn't get the same reception as maybe the Olympic boxers got when they came back.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. You know, but you know, I think it's always going to be difficult for this sport to become really mainstream. You know, just because the type of sport it is, any kind of fight sport finds it very hard to begin properly. I would see myself as a pretty good ambassador for it. Like,
I'm
quite well spoken, like quite well educated and stuff like that. And like I was on the radio yesterday.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I heard
tried
you.
To challenge me on it. Like, I was able to like put him in his face, basically. Like, I think it is getting bigger. Like, there's so many young guys that watch it. Like, I'm even getting to a point where people are kind of stopping in the streets talking, which is great. Like, you know, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think we're just there. I think in the next maybe 5 years we'll get as big as it's going to get.
Yeah, because Chris, like, you know, there's so many young fighters coming through, and having someone like you to kind of be setting the standard for them of what you can achieve in the sport, it's so good. It's just the fact that there's that little cut off between the mainstream and all the amazing young fighters coming through the system and coming through your gym in particular.
I'm 29 at the moment, and I'm hoping to God that I'll be well retired by the time all these guys get through, because there's a bunch of savages coming through all over Ireland. Like, there's so much talent. Like I come from traditional martial arts and kickboxing and stuff like that, and then into the sport maybe like a little bit later. These guys are training like from the age of 12, 13.
What age did you convert to solid MMA?
Solid MMA, geez, I think I was like 22 or 23. Like, I was kickboxing since I'm 6, and then at one stage I was training MMA without, like, I was training judo, jiu-jitsu and kickboxing in all separate gyms.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky enough to be brought by my jiu-jitsu coach at the time, Emmett Nolan. He brought me to train with John, because he was a blue belt in the John, and I was standing to catch him in the gym, and lucky he didn't have an ego and just brought me up to John, and then obviously my life has been a lot different since then.
And obviously, just getting back to Cage Warriors, Chris, Graeme Boyle and the lads of Cage Warriors, they've done an absolutely fantastic job, obviously, bringing through the years Dan Hardy and Michael Bisping, the likes of that. How good of a promotion is Cage Warriors, to fight for?
It's great, man. It, I got phoned to Jordan last week. You know, I put up in a 5-star hotel for 5 days. You know, they give you money towards your food and all that kind of stuff. And you know, like, there's other shows where, like, back in the day, I'd almost be I'd almost be just breaking even with the money I spend going to the show than what I make for the fight. You know, kind of way.
Yeah.
So it's great to be, and it's just great. It's professional, is the best way to say it. It's professional, you know, isn't it? Like, I always meant to fight in a show before, man. I rocked up to the show and the ceiling was too low.
Jesus, you know what I mean? Jesus Christ.
This is how things used to be a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, fast forward 3 or 4 years and I'm fighting in a massive stadium in Jordan, like in front of lots of people, and I'm putting up in a 5-star hotel. It's great. They're great for the sport. I think it's really changed people's opinions, and I think as well it's going to open up a lot of doors for the likes of myself and Connor and Cole and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be great.
Definitely. And what's your ultimate goal in your career? Is it that UFC contract?
I think anyone doing this sport, if you're not looking at that, like, you might as well just stay on the small show, yeah. Like, you know what I mean, and just fight for fun, like, and maybe stay amateur or whatever. That's the plan. I want to fight the best guys in the world, and they're all in the UFC, so
definitely.
Chris,
that's where I want to be. I think I'm kind of fighting like some guys that are probably of that level at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not getting the big paydays, and I'm not getting the same kind of recognition that you get if you're in the UFC for it. Like.
Yeah. Chris, have you heard any kind of word back from the UFC, from the Scouting Network, or even kind of things like the concept of kind of going through the Tough series or something like that, just to get the foot in the door?
Yeah, I just saw the Tough is actually going to have middleweights and light heavyweights. It's on the tryouts in 11 days in Vegas. To be honest, like, a few years ago, I probably would have jumped. I did jump, but I went over and tried out, and they told me I made it to the last 30, and then they didn't use the middleweights. They only went with welterweights. They asked me, could I make welterweight, and asked them, I'd have to chop off a limb. This is how awkward this is. I said I'd have to chop off a limb, and I turned around to the guy and he had me with one arm. Like, what are the odds? I haven't actually heard. And I just looked at the rank and say, and I'm ranked 7th, I think, in Europe or something. So I must be kind of just knocking on the door now. And I'd say maybe a title defense or two, and I'd be there. But the Tough thing, a few years ago, I would have jumped at it, but I don't know now, to be honest. I'd much rather get in on my own back. I think it just seems like you're kind of tied to a contract. It's not that great either, like, you know.
And as well, Chris, if the UFC comes back to Ireland, they always want that hometown hero, and it's a good gauge of a contract. Should be looking for it. It's damn right.
Yeah, that's what I think. I'd be looking for like one of my training partners, Gunnar Nelson, just got in. I've seen his contract and stuff, and it's nice.
It's not
insane money, but it's good money. Like, but it's also like, you know, the Tough, you're kind of you're stuck with that contract for 2 years, whereas with Gunny's it's 3 fights and then you get another one, you know.
Jeez,
and then obviously if you win your 3 fights, the next contract's going to be huge. So
and did you have
like I was overtraining with Hathaway, and like the kind of money he's earning is crazy. Insane money, like, so.
Yeah. They like him, the UFC.
I want that money. I want to be able to give my girlfriend all the things I keep promising that we're going to have, so I want that.
Oh, you're better
money,
off without them.
Yeah.
But tell us, did you have any family or anything over with you in Amman, Jordan?
I couldn't ask them to make that kind of trip, you know. They break their banks, you know. My brother was really really wanted to come over, and I kind of had to talk him out of it. My mom never really comes to the fights. She generally waits till she gets word I want and watches them, like, you know. Yeah. That's how she works. But I had Carl and Arthur there with me, like, and John, so it's we're pretty much family at this stage, you know. We're brothers, we bleed together, so together, like, so yeah. It was very comfortable over there. The people were great too, and Jordan was. You didn't see the sketch we did with the taxi driver, did you?
No, is it on the Cage Warriors
on YouTube or something like that. We basically, you start telling us about the King of Jordan, and so we start telling him about the Prince of Ireland, and we basically explain the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to him. We were going, we basically, instead of singing it, we went, oh yeah, he whistled for a cab, and then it came near, like, we basically bought the whole thing. He's like, oh, this is great, so, like, good crack.
Days of Yonder.
Before we wrap it up, Chris, where can you see yourself in the next 2 years?
I'm hoping representing the country in the UFC and with a few wins under my belt, you know. I'd really like that. I know we've had one guy in before who was a friend of mine, I just think we're at that level now. I think there's a few within
definitely,
the gym
yeah.
at that level, you know. I think we deserve that opportunity. So,
and Conor, would you like to thank anyone or give a shout out to anyone that's helped you along the way to get where you are today?
Obviously, John and all the guys, my girlfriend for putting up with it all, and my sponsors, Pitbull and stuff. They're great. Like, I honestly couldn't do it without these guys, Pitbull and Fnatic Shop and all those people. Like, so
excellent, mate. We're very proud of you guys, yourself and Conor and Ash as well in SPG. Hopefully I'll see you tomorrow night, and thanks a million for coming on, Chris.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, brother. Cheers.
Cheers, dude.
Thanks.
And that was Chris, the Killing Fields of Cage Warriors, and he is the new Cage Warriors middleweight champion of the the world. Mark, what do you reckon with Cage Wars? It's a serious promotion these days in Europe especially.
Well, no, I'm really getting into it now, and it's really getting me psyched now. I think the production of it's fantastic. I think that barring a few, because you see, I work in music, and it's always one of those things that lighting's always a pain in the hell for me. I wasn't to get the lighting right and stop making it look, sometimes that lighting's a bit fucking bingo hally and it gets me fucking raging at them, and it's only little things, but everything else about the promotion is big league and it's mainstream.
I just fell asleep with Mark's out there. Okay, sorry.
Shut the fuck up. I'm speaking fucking sense, brother.
Cage Warriors, top promotion. I don't care what you say.
Well, yeah, okay. That's what I said. I said that I want to fix things. That's all.
No. Okay.
Lack of sense. That's all it is.
And obviously, Mark, obviously we talked, caught up with Henzo earlier on, and Henzo obviously with what happened last night, pretty crazy shit. Henzo basically got mugged last night and he fought off two guys and still tweeted at the same time, crazy stuff, and fair play to Henzo. And we caught up with Henzo, man.
He was amazing.
It was amazing, guys, like absolute legend, Gracie family member. And we caught up with Henzo, and Henzo talked about Frankie Caesar as well, and the
Frankie Chael, the Olympics,
everything. Like, it was a really good
BJJ.
I'm not going to bore you anymore because Mark is wrecking my head right now.
So we've been in the studio for fucking hours and we're about to kill each other. We have to go travelling together. It's fucking horrible. We're going to kill each other.
It's not going
to
happen.
Talking brawls. Jesus Christ. Going to fucking kill him.
To be honest, it's quarter past two.
It's quarter past two
a.m. time in Dublin, Ireland.
It's 2:14 now. I'm counting the minutes.
Okay, fine. Oh, fucking hell.
Fuck off.
Kick your ass, bitch.
Should we go to Henzo?
Do you want me to mute you?
No, just go to Henzo.
Okay, let's go to Henzo. Okay, guys, we've got up with Henzo Grace here on today, and this is what Henzo had to say. We will chat to you in a few minutes, bitches. Oh,
I'm UFC heavyweight Steve Melosic, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Henzo Gracie, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu mixed martial arts legend from the notorious and amazing Gracie family. Henzo, how are you keeping, mate? How are things?
Everything's great, my brother. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much. Henzo, we heard a bit of news last night that you tackled a couple of guys downtown New York. What exactly went on with that?
Yeah, basically it wasn't me who tackled them. You know, they were following me for a couple blocks and then they asked me for cigarettes. I told them that I didn't smoke, and they keep moving forward and asking for cigarettes. The guys that don't smoke, next thing I see, he grabs my arm because I was waiting for them to get close to me. So I knew from the beginning, coming from Brazil, I knew that he was looking to, toward me, you know? So the next thing I see, he came close. I let them get close to me so I could see if they had a weapon or a gun or a knife. If they did it, I for sure will give everything. Even the sneakers that I love, I'll give to him. when they get close to me, he hold me by the arm. He hold my left arm, and he tried to reach for my wallet that I was carrying my front pocket, you know. And as he's doing that, his partner came towards the other side, trying to do the same on the other side. Hit him with the left hook and a straight right hand.
Cool.
This one fell. And I tried to grab the second one. As I tried to grab, he took off running, you know? And I went after him for half a block. Like a gazelle. So I just stopped, went back, and this other fellow that I knocked down, I came back and I hit him a couple more times, and I scare him a little, you know? Nothing. I hit him with love. Nothing much. I didn't hurt him, but I hit him. I roughed him up a little so he can understand that he cannot be doing that to people, you know?
Yeah.
Especially on that area, because this is the area that my life goes, my kids, that always exactly. Go, you know? So then I went, got my car, and I said, let me drive around, see if I see the second guy. Sure, everybody's on the right tune tonight, you know? If you're going to educate people, you have to do it the right way. So I drove around. Next thing I see, he's in a corner, like three avenues ahead, you know? He's sitting there on the corner looking to see if I was around.
He
didn't know my car. I drove around, and I parked out of his sight. So I came from behind him on the by the wall, and as I'm coming, he went in the street, I think looking for his friend, and then I came running. When I turned, he was right there with his back towards me. I jumped right on and choked him out, you know?
Jesus!
And then when I choked him out, since he did that, he made me go around the whole town, made me try to find him, and I need to give him something. In Brazil, we have something when someone insults you much, and a lot of times when you choke them out, and since they have no harm, they don't learn from it. So what I did after I choked him out, I turned him, and I apply short, not heavy punches on his eyes, both eyes. guarantee that tomorrow he's going to be looking like a raccoon. You know? He has something, when he looks in the mirror, he remembers he did something wrong, you know, for a couple of days.
just a normal day post-training in New York, Hanzo, yes.
This is not common, you know, this is very rare. New York is a very safe place. That's an unbelievable job. New York is very safe, but sometimes you see things like that. Then after I was telling Hollis about this, my cousin.
Yes.
You have to wonder, he's 6'4".
Yeah.
And 245 pounds. He's a huge guy. He told me that like 6 months ago, he had a rough time on the same spot. But it was a much larger group of guys who actually came at him and gave him a very hard time, you know. And then later, Daniel Gracie calls me. His wife had the same problem there. So this group is probably around there the whole time.
Same guys.
Yeah. So if I think they gotta move, you know, because it's near my academy, and I may do some visits now and then with a good group of guys.
You're damn right.
Well, fair play to you, Hanzo. That's a very admirable thing to do, to keep the scum off the streets, so to speak. But Hanzo, moving on to the mixed martial arts world, obviously with Frankie Edgar, and I know you've worked closely with Frankie in the past. What do you make of his decision to drop down to featherweight, and how much are you looking forward to?
Frankie's a small guy. He's actually a very small one, 155, you know? Like, the guys at 155, they walk around over 185.
Yeah.
185, 190. And Frank actually walks around at 153, 154. He walks around that way. Like, he actually eats the day of the weight in.
Yeah.
You know, he's the only guy who does that. But if he decided, he could easily even go to 135 if that's what he wanted, you know? And Frank is such a tough guy that, honestly, if he decides to fight even heavyweight, I'm supporting him, because I never see nobody train as hard as he does. And, you know, and everybody with that commitment to training and hard work always has a chance, you know. And his jiu-jitsu is improving. And, you know, today I was working with him. We work for like 2.5 hours today in the morning. So, for sure, Aldo is going to have his hands full, you know. He's a tough A little Jersey Shore guy is a tough guy.
And Hanzo, I'm a big believer that Frankie won both the fights against Benson Henderson. I believe Frankie definitely took the second fight, and I reckon he won the first fight as well. I think it's a bit of a shame the UFC, I think it's been a bit of a sort of a witch hunt with Dana White to push him down to you know, 145. Because there were so many other good fights as well. I know we could have possibly faced Joe Lowe's on and Anthony Pettis and people like that. Obviously, he moved up from WEC. Do you believe, did Frankie really want to go down to featherweight?
No, it's in reality, this was an opportunity to appear. Like, while we were in Manila for the 1FC, they call it. The guy that was fighting Jose Aldo get hurt, and it's difficult to get someone to fight a tough guy as Jose Aldo. You know, you have to understand, you walk in to fight Jose Aldo, you lose, you're in the back of the line. It's like, you know, and especially guys who are ready, well, right there to jump out of the bottle, and next thing you see, you're all the way on the bottom, you know?
Yeah,
and this opportunity came like that. Suddenly they call it, they say his opponent hurt, Aldo's opponent hurt his, something hurt his leg or knee.
Cock,
so they offer the fight to little Frankie, and he doesn't say no to a good fight, you know, and immediately
definitely.
He embraced the idea and did it.
Hanzo, Frankie seemed very excited about the prospect. He seemed like he'd been thinking about this fight in his mind for a long time. Had you been in within the camp, had you guys been talking about the Aldo fight as a prospect?
You have to understand, I love Jose Aldo.
Yes.
Like, what an amazing kid with an amazing story. He's one of the most amazing guys out there. You know, today, for someone to reach the status of champion of the UFC, the guy really exceeds everybody else.
You
know, he excels on the art. He's an unbelievable guy on every aspect. But it was not us who ever talk about this. It's like, it's those fights that everybody want to watch it. It's like, who's left for Jose Aldo to fight? Who's left for Frankie, you know? And you're going to tell me, oh, if someone says, oh, Ben Henderson beat him, everybody knows who won that fight. We can't lie. You know, I watched like 5 times, and I couldn't change, not even for an inch, my concept of how I saw that fight. And a lot of people can say, oh, you are biased, and yes, I am. But even though when I watch it again and again, I want to make sure that I was being fair when I gave my opinion. And And I have to be honest, that was a huge mistake from the judges, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
I agree.
It's hard because you work your whole life. It's like you're not working for 2 months or 3 months to get in shape. It's a whole life work to get where you are and get snatched from you, not by a fair fight, not by an amazing athlete, which Ben Henderson is, an amazing guy across the ring. He's getting snatched by you from the guys who maybe never step in the ring. You know, it's really frustrating.
And do you think Frankie, obviously, if he beats Jose Aldo, do you think... He will want to become go back up and face Benson possibly again for the title if he does win that featherweight title, be a two-way champion.
This Frank is the only guy that I believe can have three belts, 135, 145, and 155. If there's anybody that could achieve that, could do that, it's Frank. Nobody else. You know, I know the UFC wouldn't be happy with that. They would rather have a title bout than every event. But the reality, if they give this little guy a chance, man, you know, there's nobody tougher than Ed Henderson. Look how he handled him. Nobody tougher than BJ. Look how he fought BJ, you know.
Exactly.
And look, Gray Maynard. Gray Maynard is a monster, you know. And look how he did.
Henzo, obviously we've just passed the illustrious 151 debacle and the long last pay-per-view. Chael Sonnen, John Jones, how did you feel about it? Being the person who actually stepped in to give John Jones a bit of advice to stop the smack talk ahead of the Anderson Silva fight.
Not John Jones, Chael Sonnen.
To Chael Sonnen, sorry.
Yeah.
When you gave him that advice, and he stopped and listened, and he really heeded your advice, and he wanted to start taking the fight seriously.
Chael, you see, like when people see kids, they see like a grown man. I see as one of the kids. That I saw making the transition from wrestling to MMA. You know, I saw the beginning of his career. I was in Japan watching his fights when nobody in America knew who he was, you know? And I saw the amazing athlete being formed and becoming a man and becoming a professional athlete, an MMA fighter, you know, improving his hands, improving every aspect he had on his fighting skills, you know? And it's different. So when I call him, I didn't call him to be rough for him. I called him to ask him to show the people who he was, you know? I say, in the end of the day, people, some may like you, some may hate you, but they all will respect you because they know who truly you are, you know? And he understood that. He understood that the greatness of this sport and could not be dulled by trash-talking only, you know? Like, go there and sell the amazing fighter that you are. He did, you know? He's an unbelievable fighter. I like him a lot. And if they want to put the fight... with John Jones, I think this is a great fight because there's nobody that sells a fight better than Chael Sonnen.
How did you feel?
If I had a fighting company, I would hire him.
Yeah, you're down, right.
We all would.
Yeah. How did you feel about John Jones? Did you think he turned down the fight and cancelled, or did you think it was UFC's mistake? How did you feel about it?
The reality, like you asking to a guy that if you walk in here now and ask me to train or to fight with you, I have a good space here that all I have to do is move the table. I was raised like this. My whole life I was like this. It's different. Today they create a sport. This is a sport where there's professional athletes. A guy like John Jones, he has goals. He sets goals like a professional basketball player, like a professional football player. So in reality, I cannot tell you, like, I don't know what kind of passions motivate him to be a fighter. So I cannot tell you what he should have done without walking on his shoes, you know, like, without know who he needs to support, which the people who are behind him and support him and go in the right direction. So it's like, it's easy for us to go, oh, you have to fight, you have to. It's like, man, a man is his own master, man, you know, like, what we have to say is, I would like to have seen John Jones take the fight.
Yeah.
That's what you, me, and everybody else has
exactly.
to say.
Exactly.
But to judge him from that, you know, would be very wrong.
Yeah.
Henzo, do you think that this new school of fighter, when a legend such as yourself in the mixed martial arts world, who's grown up fighting and knowing that the fight is the important thing and it's dignity and honor, do you think when you see people trying to be a celeb and a Tiger Woods and a Michael Jordan, do you think that's going to be the final death knell in the sport, and it's going to be something?
I do believe so. You know, I think there's nothing worse than a big ego.
Yeah.
You know, like one thing is you have to think very highly of you. Even if you decide, one of the most amazing pictures I have seen is a little cat looking in the mirror and the reflection that he sees is a lion. You know, that's one of the best, the best picture describing what a man's personality should see. It doesn't matter your physical condition, if you have problems, handicaps, you have to see yourself always as the perfect human being and as strong as everybody else. You know, but at the same time, this is a very, very thin line where you cannot cross to the point of neglect those who support you to get there, to neglect those who are your fans and who are buying the pay-per-view, so they ask you to take a picture with you and you blow them off. You know, the moment that you became too big for that, you know, it's the time to get your ass kicked and have a reality check, you know, because that's what our sport, it's called reality check. They may call MMA, but it's, to me, it's a reality check, because in there you learn to be humble.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, it's because you didn't have your ass kicked.
Yeah.
How different it is, how they treat you different when you walk out of that ring as you just lost a fight, you know. And I experience everything, and I know everything, and I live everything, not only through my lifetime, but through my father's lifetime, through my grandfather's lifetime, and I'm the third generation of fighters. So thank God I learned from smart people who lived that before me, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of the kids today, unfortunately, they are just making their own new story, and But there's nothing better than time.
Yeah.
It will teach them all. So it's just give time, you know. Like, it's very easy to see those cocky little ones finding a new humbling attitude in the near future.
Sorry, Henzo, do you think John Jones will be humbled quite soon, or do you think that could possibly happen to him because
of his
attitude?
Humbleness is coming to everyone in there. Every dog will have his day in there.
And Henzo, do you feel as a coach yourself, if someone walks up to you, if a fighter walks into you as a coach and asks you, Henzo, should I take this fight on short notice? How does your advice go as a coach?
I always tell them, I want you to tell me if you want to take the fight.
Yeah.
Because the reality, don't ask me. I will tell you to fight. That's me. This is a big problem, because fighting has a lot to do with moral. It's how you feel inside, and it's the strength that drives you. And if you are in a period that you are weak, mentally, that your confidence is low, it's not a good time to fight. You better to build that with hard training. And a lot of times, athletes like that, if they're not training hard to take a fight in short notice, it's not something easy, you know. And it can be bad for his career, because if he gets his ass kicked, it may change his way even as seeing the fight. You know, he become a different fighter. You may take you're taking him a piece of his soul out of him. So it's important that you ask as a coach, you ask him if he wants to fight. What do you think? How you feeling? How you feeling in training? Are you confident? He's gonna tell you right away, you know.
Obviously, Henzo, thanks so much for that. You were over at ONE FC there, coaching a couple of your students. How did you find the promotion? How did you find the fights over there?
Oh man, I love it! I love it. The fights there—it reminds me of the early UFC.
Yeah.
You know, where people would go in there and let everything out. Like I said, was over there is not a business.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people who's fighting UFC is trying to make a living and is trying to be economically, you know, wealth in terms of holding the position and, you know, trying to collect the best and the most profit they could from the sport. Different in they don't pay those high purses like the UFC, but they pay good and they promote right. They put an unbelievable show. This one in Manila was unbelievable, you know.
Yeah.
Everything was perfect. The announcers, the promoters, everybody involved, the organizers, perfect. I felt like I was a pride.
Cool.
It's a brilliant setup over there. The pyrotechnics, everything, the graphics it's completely you know, top notch. Henzo, obviously you rose there and Gregor, they both won it, but Ivor lost. It was a mixed bag of nights for the Gracie family. What did you prepare on the night for the guys to get the jobs done in the fights?
And you see, the most important thing is the hard work they did. the hard work they did all those months previous to the schedule of the fight, you know, the day of the fight. And if that is done right, the confidence, everything is there, you know. And I'm every time we're getting ready to get in there, all that I normally tell them it's make sure you do you represent yourself well, because your kid will be watching this in the future, you know. And make sure you are proud when you watch that with him. And they always understand the meaning, you know. So they go in there and they really try to fight, they really try to win, you know. They really try to give the best they have. Amazing kids, man. I'm very lucky to train these amazing people.
Henzo, what's it like to bring people over to the Philippines? Is it really just like a throwback to the Pride days, in the sense that sort of travel before a fight? Is it hard on younger fighters?
No, I think when you're in shape, traveling, things like that, is not a problem at all, you know? Not a problem at all. Look at the guys, Ben Henderson and Frank Edgar, fighting in the high altitude in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah.
You know, it's like once you get in shape, you're in shape, man. It doesn't matter where you are. Your reactions are different. Your strength is different in everything. Your speed, you're a different animal, you know? So I don't think that traveling 12 hours or 20 hours will actually hurt you. Give you a couple of days to rest and work out there, you're going to be fresh and you'll do it again.
And Phil Baroni cut 20 pounds in one night. What do you make of that? Guys cutting that amount of weight in one night before the weigh-ins at 1FC?
Phil Baroni was always very efficient in terms of losing weight, you know. He was always very efficient on that. He's a guy who works very well with losing weight, gaining weight. In physique, he looks amazing, you know. And for sure gives an advantage, you know. He can hit harder than anybody in there at that weight division. And he proved that night.
And with Victor Cui heading the organization, how far do you think 1FC can go, Henzo?
My brother, with the passion that I saw on them there, I believe he's going to go all the way.
You really think so, yeah?
One day I hope I can have my grandkid fighting there.
Yeah. And do you, obviously you said you like the Pride rules and stuff. Do you agree with them as well, the Pride rules?
Yeah, I love Pride rules. I think more things are allowed. The fights are actually less violent, you know, and shorter. Yeah, the possibility of you getting a serious injury are much smaller.
Yeah.
Henzo, we're just past another Olympics, which you were over at in London.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how far do you feel we are? How long do you think we are from getting jiu-jitsu into the Olympics? Do you think it could come about in the next in Brazil?
I don't believe. I look into this a lot. And I even spoke with the Olympic Brazilian president, committee president, you know, and it's impossible. It's going to be impossible to put it in there. And there's a whole process to actually put a sport. And normally when you bring that sport over, it takes 12 years or something like this.
What is it?
So
what is it that's holding up jiu-jitsu from getting in? Is it the rules or is it...
I don't believe it's the rules. It's they already Olympics. Nothing Olympics nowadays. It's nothing more than a business deal. You know, that's the reality. It become a commercial thing.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
The main actors don't actually make the money that they deserve.
You know,
the people who got look at American girl Kayla Harris, one unbelievable judo player, got the gold. Well, she has to work hard every day to be able to put food on the table. You know, it's like she cannot even dedicate 100% to what she does, you know.
And
this is it with most of our athletes, you know, with the exception of those who run track or maybe swim, because I have big sponsors like Nike
and Puma, and
big sneakers brand, and you know. But in reality, it becomes for the others, for all the others, it's really like in my country we say amador, which means love the pain, amateur in Portuguese means the human being who loves the pain, you know. So it's like that shows the those amateurs that we have in the Olympics, they really love the pain of suffering day in and day out. Like right now, they are planning for 4 years from now, you know?
Henzo, obviously you organized the first ever World Championships in Jiu-Jitsu with Nick Diaz, which you brought over for. Would you think of bringing something like that in to replace it again, just to be the top of the sport?
Definitely, definitely. I believe, competition is what brings the sport to a higher level, you know, and whatever an athlete goes in there and makes a mistake and someone capitalizes on it and he loses the fight because of the mistake, he will never do the mistake again. He'll be able to fix his game and teach a better way to see even the move or the problem that he had to all the future generations, you know. So this competition is actually what brings the sport to a higher place, you know, and I do believe competition anywhere. They should have put competition in every country, every place, every state, you know, and every week if they could.
And Henzo, getting back to the Olympic Games as well, just there, you just touched on earlier on, do you think the fact that BJJ has so much to do with mixed martial arts, is that the reason why the IOC won't consider BJJ being in the Olympic Games?
No, I don't think, I don't think this is the problem. It's just like the Olympics, the Olympic as an organization, they were actually looking into removing some of the, like the Greco-Roman and some of the sports, of the fighting sports, because with the difficulty of generating money, you know? It's basically the only money they make with that is with tickets, you know? So they were looking to actually bring sports to the Olympics, so they can sell it, you know? It became a huge company. It's a multinational company who wants to generate money, you know? And a lot of times, what I believe is the fear of most of jiu-jitsu guys, if you sit down and you look, show me who actually makes money out of judo, who makes money out of wrestling. The moment that a sport becomes Olympic, it has a tendency of being free and being provided by schools and everybody. And the next thing you see, out there, like look at jiu-jitsu, everybody generates money, generates business, generates employment for a lot of people and a lot of schools, you know, and academies packed. Like my school, I have 1,340 students. You know, I have over 16 or 18 people working for me just in one gym. You know, so imagine if this was maybe an Olympic sport, I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't be able to have that because my price would go down. I wouldn't be able to keep that. I wouldn't be able to keep bringing the champions to teach. And, you know, I would go to for the life that I always thought I was going to have it, which was living in my academy, sleeping on the mats, using my gi as a pillow. That's what I always thought that my riches would be, you know.
And
thank God, thanks to jiu-jitsu and the school and the system, everything turned out different and better. But that's a lot of fear that the jiu-jitsu people and other fighters have, is that happened the same to jiu-jitsu that happened to wrestling and judo.
Obviously, Hanzo, Caesar's quite close to you as well. What's your opinion of the Diaz brothers? What do you think they're going to achieve in the next couple of years? Is Nick going to come back to the UFC?
Honestly believe Nick is a star and one of the toughest guys I've seen out there, you know? And Caesar are great teachers, especially because he learned from me.
You're darn right. What's
Caesar, unbelievable guys. The whole area there that produces only unbelievable people. And he just called me. Actually, he called me right when I was talking to you here.
Yeah.
I'm just wrong. I saw his name, and I couldn't answer because I was talking to you. But in reality, he's able to produce unbelievable champions. And the Diaz brothers, for sure, is one of them, you know, like unbelievable guys. And those two boys, I can't wait to see them fighting, you know. They bring excitement to their sport a lot.
Unbelievable boxers, indeed. Hanzo, it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on. Would you just give us a little bit of a prediction before you go off the line? What's going to happen with Frankie Edgar in the next few months? What way is it going to go for Frankie?
I really think he will get the belt. Like, we believe on that a lot, you know. We don't train for second place.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially because we believe the second place is the first loser.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
So we will actually work hard and on this last week that we are... that we have it to make him the champion, you know, and believe it, education and will to fight, this kid has, you know, like in a way that doesn't, I don't know how he fits on his little body.
Excellent. Hanzo, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on and an honor. I really appreciate your time, bro.
Thank you, guys. All the best to you guys.
And that was Hanzo Gracie. It might have sounded like Hanzo Gracie, but we did an argument towards the end of the conversation with myself and Moriarty, so we'll move on from there. But seriously interesting times with Hanzo, with Frankie and things like that. What can you say? Frank's a legend, man. I love him. As we all know.
I think Frankie's corner is obviously covered this week, but he's obviously a superstar. But I think that he's handled himself really well this week. He's been a bright shining light in a world which desperately needed that bright shining light to shine through the fucking doldrums.
They probably do need someone to go down and you know come another superstar like Jose Aldo in that division. But you know,
Do you think it's going to be tough for him to go out there? Because I'm not saying this in a bad way, but like you know, Frankie Edgar has always been the kind of the fan favourite.
Yeah.
And he's only going into Brazil. Do you think he's going Frankie to revel in being the bad guy?
Frankie said today he hopes the Brazilian crowd are cheering his name by the end of that fight. So that says a lot about Frankie, what he sets out to do.
Yeah, I know, but that's vaguely delusional in the sense
it's not really, to be honest.
Well, not saying anything about the Brazilian crowds, but they have the same kind of rap that Irish crowds and English crowds have, that the UFC think that they can kind of tarnish.
No, Brazilians are more hostile. We're more realistic.
Well, we're just disillusioned. The point is that I think that the Brazilian crowds they tend to support their own, and that's something cool. That's something about the Brazilians. They like to support
nation. But like, let's not get about Frankie's not going to be intimidated by the crowd.
Yeah, but they're not going to support Frankie Edgar.
Maybe You never know. Obviously they won't, but...
you never know, but obviously they won't.
Right, but at the end of the day, Edgar...
I mean, he's not going to piss them off in the way that Chael Sonnen...
He'll have a lot of fans on pay-per-view, and I'll be one of Edgar's fans on pay-per-view. I like the boy from Tom's River, fucking New Jersey, bro.
What time is it going to be aired at, do you know?
It'll be aired at probably daytime. Probably be like 11 o'clock.
Because I'm always worried...
11 o'clock Sunday morning our time, like Japan.
No, I'm more worried about American time just because our pay-per-views are never... Like, it's such a super fight that when you have Aldo against Edgar, in the US, I think it's always going to sell anyway. Because I think everyone's always going to have an interest in an Aldo fight. And well, everyone loves a bit of Frankie Edgar.
I think it's a lot like the Mendes fight.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot like a bigger beast stepping down like Aldo was. I know Mendes, Aldo, whatever. That's ridiculous. It's no it is a comparison, but I think the fact that Frankie's stepping down... being a heavier weight will give Frankie the advantage, because Frankie will feel like there were so many guys the UFC could put him up against, as we've talked about, like Pettis, Lozon, Cerrone, all these guys in WC that he didn't meet when the two companies merged. I think it was a big mistake from the UFC. I think Frankie will go down and beat Jose Aldo and then step back up and be a two-way champion.
And what did you think?
Or he will be two-way champion then.
What
Sorry.
Did you think when you heard that the idea that Edgar's had been thinking about this fight for a long time, had actually been kind of training and watching Aldo? Because it really kind of makes sense. He'd always been kind of longing for this fight in a roundabout way.
No, he'd never been longing for this fight.
No, but not longing for the drop in weight, longing for the fight against Aldo.
No, I don't know.
It's not about dropping down in weight. He's not saying that. He never wanted to drop down in weight.
I think it's
But fine. He had an interest in the meeting against Aldo to catch weight or something.
Yeah, fine, that's what I'm saying. But I think his management company could have put that sort of illusion in his head, because there were so many good fights, regardless. Well, he did win both those fights, as far as I'm concerned, against Bendo. Listen, right, let's have a look at the Bendo fight, the second Bendo fight especially, right? The three of those judges, one of them, Tony Weeks, right? Tony Weeks was a striking... He was a former boxing judge. That's a fact.
Yeah.
He was the only one to score that in Edgar's favour. And let's be honest about it, right? I can't understand when people go on about this and go... I watched the fight again last night. I did. And I watched Chris Weidman, who we're supposed to have on the show today. I watched his fight against Mark Munoz. And obviously he trashed Munoz, you know, and he's out for a year or whatever, right? But I watched that fight and I went, fuck me, man. How? Like, I went.
But completely you.
No, I was impartial when I watched it. And I went, seriously. And a lot of people actually have agreed with me. Henzo tonight.
Yeah,
agreed.
But everyone agrees with you,
not
for
no,
fuck's
not,
sake.
I'm not saying that. You're just obviously jealous of people.
No,
really. I'm
no,
not
no.
Saying that.
I agree with you. I think he won those fights as well.
You
it's fucking obvious.
No. It's obvious. You're telling me it's
obvious. I think that Frankie Edgar won both of those fights. What I mean is, the fact is that lots of people think that. It's not completely obvious. I think judging controversy exists and runs rampant.
Why is 7 out of 10 people I've talked to about that fight?
Because I think that you must understand that judging is quite frankly ludicrous the way it is at the moment.
Yes,
and that's the way it is. You put 10 judges in the room.
Why should one of the best fighters who walks around that his weight be forced down? And he is being forced down. Henzo wasn't too impressed.
He's not being forced down. He'd be forced down if he had to fight someone beforehand.
Let's be honest.
The fucking Aldo fight is bigger than any fight in the division other than the fucking rematch.
There's no other fight they can put on.
Can I say, Edgar's against fucking Aldo is bigger than Henderson rematch?
I wouldn't go that far.
Of course it fucking is.
No, it's not.
It's a fucking super fight.
How is that a super fight? How is that a super fight? When a guy is beating a guy.
Because
twice,
you think that he's.
Opinion,
you think
how
he's.
Is that,
a,
how is that
because
a super
you're
fight?
Calling
how
him the that? Champion.
How
because you and I think
so
he's the champion.
Me. No, you and I.
I think
clearly,
I still.
Clearly,
I still. No,
on.
I still think he's
no.
still. He's
Bullshit.
Still worthy of the champion, and I think he could beat anyone else in that division as well. But the fact is that he lost two matches to Henderson, so you can't have a rubber match because you can't have a rubber match to lose three.
And what
matches
did I say earlier on? That's what was said. You could put in a fight with Frankie Edgar, with guys who've moved up from WEC like Pettis and fucking
Joe
Lozon. No, it's more money for everyone all round.
But which is more money for Edgar?
Well, clearly that. No, listen.
Like, it's better for him.
Listen.
He goes down, fights Aldo,
promote
wins or
division.
Loses, and then goes back up again. It's fine.
That division has so many fucking cracking fights. You could put a main eventer. It's not even funny.
No, I think you're absolutely right in that
the
sense.
The lightweight division is by... anyone arguing this is talking to their fucking passage. Because the lightweight division is the best... division.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, I know. WEC
you've
built
Pat
it.
Healy, an absolute grinder, top fucking fighter, fighting Melendez in 3 weeks' time for the Strikeforce.
And stepping in to completely fuck with the fucking old Strikeforce.
I think he's a good chance to get Melendez. I think Melendez is completely overrated. And too much talk about Melendez.
And Pat, who we're probably going to have on pretty soon as well.
We'll have Pat on next Friday. Yeah, I'm fucking telling
Pat has, Pat has a chip in his shoulder against the whole way they're protecting... They're protecting Strikeforce talent in Melendez, Rousey, and Cormier. And they're protecting them in such a way, they're kind of guarding them, and they don't want them to be hurt.
I think he's
always been an underdog, and he wants to be the underdog who kicks his ass.
And he will. He'll fucking... Yeah. I guarantee you, right, we'll have him in 2 weeks' time in the show, and he will be the new Strikeforce lightweight champion of the world.
This is UFC's Andy Ogle, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined online by UFC heavyweight title contender, Stipe Miocic. Stipe, how are things? How you keeping, mate? You well?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. We're enjoying the weather here in sunny Ireland, actually, for a change. The weather's actually pretty good here, so we're loving it. How are things with you?
Oh, good, good. The weather here is hot and humid.
Good stuff. Stipe, obviously starting off UFC Nottingham, how much are you looking forward to the prospect of facing off against Stefan Struve in Nottingham on this side of the pond in Europe?
I'm excited, man. It's going to be a great fight. You know, Stefan, he's a tough dude, man. You know, he's good all around, and it's going to be awesome. You know, it's going to be a great war, and I can't wait. I'm so excited. And I just can't wait to, you know, come overseas in Nottingham, you know, even though I don't like flying, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm excited, man. It's going to be a great time.
Brilliant stuff. And obviously, you're coming off your last victory over Shane Del Rosario. Obviously, Shane was previously unbeaten till you put a stop to that. How tough was that fight? And you overcame a little bit of adversity in the first round. How pleased were you with the victory in that fight?
You know, being a fight, you know, I know he's going to try to kick me and stuff. You know, it felt good, fine. You know, it felt good. You know, just he was just kicking me a lot. You know, and I just, you know, took my time with it, you know, saw an opening, got a takedown, and then, you know, second round, I was going to do what I was going to do, and, you know, and then the fight went well for me at the end.
And obviously, you're looking at your opponent, Stefan Struve, in Nottingham. He's a tall and rangy sort of guy. What are you preparing for, and what are you looking for? What are you going to implement in the fight in Nottingham?
I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, you know, but you know, I'm going to work on stuff that he's good at and pretty much every aspect, you know, and get better at, and that's what, you know, going into the fight as, you know, working on everything.
Stipe, is it hard to find training partners to replicate his size in training?
I think so. There's not many 6'11 people walking around. My coach stands on a chair and I'll do tab work, right?
It's the only way to do it, isn't it? What have you really been working on ahead of this fight now? You've been on such a roll as of late, and you've been so impressive with your wins. Is there something new that you want to bring to your game here?
Keep doing what I'm doing, man. Just keep winning. You know, that's the name of the game, and, you know, keep working hard and getting better and having fun.
And obviously, you're a fireman as well, Stipe. How much harder is it to juggle the two together, because it's, you know, obviously being a fireman's a pretty tough profession, and obviously mixed martial artists is as well.
I'm part time in both departments, so they work well with me. They, you know, guys help me out and stuff like that if I need a shift covered or my trade. You know, I usually just trade them, but they're always behind me and they help me out. And then you know, it does, you know, sometimes it's time consuming and sometimes it, you know, and I don't have a life, but. You know, it's all right. You know, it keeps me busy, and it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. And Stipe, as well, obviously being in Nottingham, it's your first time fighting overseas. Have you a message for your fans over this side of the pond? Because there's a lot of people really looking forward to this fight. We're actually going over ourselves as well to Nottingham. We were accredited today, so we're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I got a bunch of family coming. My father, who moved back to Croatia a few years ago, is coming in town. I haven't seen him in a while. My cousins are coming. My mom's coming, which is funny because she doesn't watch me fight, but I told her she should come and hang out with me during the week, and then she could just sit in the hotel room. my girlfriend's coming too, so awesome. She's excited. And then I got my doctor and then my nutritionist are coming, and my manager and stuff, and a bunch of my coaches. We have a little crowd, so it'll be cool.
So half the world is coming.
That's right.
Stipe, I was very interested. What are your actual your links to Croatia? Your parents Croatian or your grandparents? Or?
My parents are both from Croatia. Yeah, my father came over when he was 21, and my mother came over when she was like 5.
Okay, thanks for beating us in the European Championships this summer as well in the soccer. Yeah. I don't know if you watched that. Croatia beat Ireland in the soccer in the European Championships this summer. If you followed it.
It was hard.
The football.
Oh, yeah, I was watching it.
Yeah, were you watching it?
I had a couple guys, you know, I get guys out there like, texting me, talking shit the whole time.
Oops, I don't know about it. Mate, you can say what you want on this podcast. You can say what you want. Listen, mate, what's going to happen in this fight? Where can you see this fight going against Stefan Struve?
You know, I hate to, like, make predictions like that. You know, I'm just I look at it as like I'm gonna go in there and give it all I got and get that W no matter what, how it happens. You know, if it's a three, you know, 5-round war, you know, submission, yeah, knockout, whatever, I don't care. I'm gonna get that W no matter how it happens.
Awesome. So you're pretty confident going in. Another question. Obviously, in the last 2 weeks, we've heard. You know, we've been getting a lot of the fighters' views in this situation and the whole UFC 151 situation. What's your take on the John Jones situation and what went down with that?
It's hard. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't me, you know.
I
can't really say anything. You know, it's between them and him, you know, and it is what it is, you know.
So you wouldn't say, would you have taken a fight on short notice yourself personally?
I mean, I don't know. I like fighting, so I probably would have.
Fair enough.
When you're fighting in Nottingham, is this your ninth win in a row now? Who are you going to be looking for after this? This, if you can pull this win out of the bag, have you got any one big name you want?
Actually, it's my tenth. I'm going for my tenth.
Tenth win, sir.
Who's calling? Who's calling, mate?
That's right.
I was just messing with you, man. I was messing around. But no, man. I'm just, you know, everything's going to go. Hopefully, everything goes right. September 29th, you know, and. Just wait for the next phone call and tell me I'm fighting.
There must be someone you're looking at, Stipe, no? You're thinking of... Is there anyone you're thinking of ahead of that, no? if you do.
Oh, no, I'm worried about September always, 29th.
Fair enough, bro. Obviously, being unbeaten as well, you've never lost an amateur fight as well as a professional fight. Does that give you like an upper edge, an upper confidence going into the fight?
Yes and no. You know, I think just the way I train, the people I train with, you know, they give me that confidence, you know. And anyone can get beat, doesn't matter, you know, but I think the way you train, the people you train with, it's going to make you get the confidence that you need.
Would you say Struve is possibly your toughest competitor thus far?
I think so, you know, of course. I think every fight has your next toughest opponent.
Awesome. Brilliant. Steve, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the show. And is there anyone you'd like to give a big shout out to or anything like that?
Plug your Twitter.
My Twitter is at S-M-I-O-C-I-C. I have a Facebook page, a fan page. I want to thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries, man. Anytime.
I would like to thank my strong style, my fight team to train with, my coach Marcus Marinelli, my coaches Joe, Steve, Pablo, my training, Cal and Tony, and my strength coach, Dave Morgan. I have my sponsors. I just signed with Feel the Fighter, yay. Catchy Inc., Muscle Farm, Defense Soap, Tim Lally Chevrolet, John P. Lennon, Rock Tape. I'm probably forgetting some. I'll probably get in trouble for that later, but I'll make it up, I promise. my family, especially my friends, you know, everyone that supports me. And all the fans, everywhere, all the creation fans, thank you so much.
Stipe, absolute pleasure.
Absolute legend.
Pleasure to have you on, mate. And anytime. And we'll be over in Nottingham as well, so hopefully we'll see you over there.
No, please, that'd be great, man. Love hanging out with you guys.
Definitely. We're 100% over after today. We got the nod, so we're all good to go.
Awesome, man. I can't wait.
Cheers, man.
Cheers, Stipe. Thanks, man.
Hey, you too, guys. Bye-bye.